This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here live from the MVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. There have been rumblings within the Fortnite community that Epic Games has not been paying out their prize pools. Joining me to speak about this and other news in the world of esports is Invin Global esports reporter Nick Geraci. Thanks for joining me, Nick.
Thanks for having me back. Appreciate it.
I'm a little curious about Fortnite. I know we haven't talked about it before, but there's been stories going around that Epic Games, that they're not paying out their prize pools. Is that true?
I mean, there's nothing really confirmed on that, but there are, you know, several accounts of players saying that they haven't been paid out for their portion of the prize pool. I think some players in the last Australian major mentioned something on it, and it's more than one instance. You know, I'm not sure if it's true. I wouldn't think that Epic is, you know, forcefully or purposefully withholding these funds, but I think that, if anything, it's potentially symptomatic of Epic Games, frankly, just their mismanagement of Fortnite esports as a whole. This is not the only time we've heard pro players complain about how Epic Games runs their competitive circuit. They've done things like release giant patches and major update adjustments just days, if not hours, before major tournaments, force professional players to use sponsored, like, mouse and keyboards, which, you know, like, everyone should be able to use their own specs, in my opinion. We're talking about competitive integrity here. So I'm not really sure whether they're true or false. You know, I've read into them. I mean, there's just players claiming things. Yeah, there's definitely, like, accounts of that happening, but I don't know if it's true, but it wouldn't necessarily surprise me, since I'm not really a big believer in how Epic Games manages anything regarding competitive Fortnite.
Yeah, because Fortnite's not hurting for cash at all. I mean, aren't they owned, or at least the majority shareholder is Tencent Games, right?
That's exactly what I'm saying, right? It's not that they're like, oh, we're hurting for money, so we're withholding this money from pro players. If anything, it's probably negligence. You know, if this is happening, I would say that it's just that it's not, like, Epic has proven time and time again that the actual competitive integrity of Fortnite esports is not a priority for them, really. And it happens in unfortunate ways, like, and this could potentially be one of them. It's not something that we've seen really before. And like I said, I don't think it's that, you know, oh man, we're hurting for cash, let's lie to these players, or, like, ghost these players. I don't think it's that sketchy. I just think it doesn't make it okay, of course. But I think it's right around the same thing of, like, how much does Epic Games really care about the competitive Fortnite scene past it being kind of a marketing tool, right? So I think that it's problematic, but I wouldn't say it's like they're withholding money from players purposefully. I would assume there's just some sort of breakdown in communication and there's negligence. We've had this happen in tournaments before with other games. I think that it's just magnified because of the magnitude of Fortnite, and that a game this big with, like you said, this much backing shouldn't be running into these problems.
Now, I'm a little curious because I'm not sure about the Fortnite tournament scene. I know when it comes to fighting games, like especially Street Fighter, sometimes the tournaments aren't sanctioned by Capcom. Is that the same thing here? Right. Are there too many weekly tournaments that are just not sanctioned by Epic Games? But hey, you know, it has Fortnite slashed on it, so they should be able to pay out. Is that what's happening?
That is, you know, a potential aspect of the problem. However, I don't necessarily think that that's, like, necessarily an excuse. Like you said, we've seen it in fighting games where, like, you know, oh, this TO never got me my money. You know, I mean, there's players I know now who still are owed, you know, a couple thousand dollars from years back, right? But I think that having Fortnite being open for third-party tournament hosting is a very good thing. I think it really lends itself to the grassroots way that the community can just kind of organize, whether it be just, like, you know, local tournaments or, you know, even, like, you know, Keemstar doing his, like, you know, his Friday Fortnite thing. I think that's a good thing. I do think that there needs to be potentially more of a standardization or more oversight from Epic Games on this stuff, but again, they're not even overseeing their own tournaments to my standards, so I'm not surprised that that would potentially happen in a third-party Fortnite tournament either.
Now, I have to ask, I've tried to play Fortnite before, and I don't understand why it's so popular, especially against other games that I think are better, PUBG, even League of Legends. I mean, where'd this come from? It just came out of nowhere.
You know, like, Apex Legends has some popularity. PUBG is you know, like, I guess sort of the originator of the Battle Royale thing, right? And what I think really that Fortnite gets right is that you can have fun in the game and be creative and kind of do your own thing. And regardless of where you end up placing, it's fun. I mean, you're dropped into this very colorful map off of a flying bus. Everything's super brightly colored. There's a lot of fantastical elements. Like, it feels good to interact with the environment. And that's also extended itself to, you know, the community is very much like, it's very like widespread. I mean, there's so many kids playing Fortnite, and you know, these kids have parents who may play video games on the NES and stuff, right? I mean, there's generational interest in that kind of way, and really that's Fortnite's main strength. Saying that they made it, I mean, the game is fun, don't get me wrong, but it's not that they made a great competitive game, or that they even made a fantastically designed video game experience. That the game and the way that it allows itself to remain semi-competitive while still being fun first lends itself to a very, very committed, very, very passionate community where you can kind of be anything you want to be. I mean, you know, we have, there's the Battle Royale mode, but there's, the creator mode, and you can play all these different styles of, you can run and gun, you can just build and kind of shoot from afar. Like, there's so much that you can do. Like, there isn't really any set rules, and so there's so many different people, whether it be what games they like, how they like to play them, what age they are, how experienced they are in games, that there's mass crossover and appeal. And I think that's what really, PUBG is much, frankly, more difficult. And it's a lot more, it's tactical, and it's, they're team-based, squads of four in PUBG is like very, very like tactical. I mean, that's why there's esports tournaments around it, right? But I think that the fact that like Fortnite, especially taking off in North America, has that like competition second vibe to me, honestly. Like, and it's more about like the experience and interacting with the community and all of that stuff. That's kind of what they put first, and that's what's paid off for them so far.
Now, does Epic Games have any other games in the work, or is it just Fortnite right now?
I know that obviously because they're the originators of the Gears of War franchise, I'm sure they have some involvement with Gears 5, but if I recall correctly, they it's definitely a different development team than the first Gears of War trilogy, so I think that Epic Games is going to ride Fortnite as far as it takes them. But I mean, I do think that they do have other games in the works, and I think what we should expect to see, Xbox 360 announce the Project Scarlet, and then, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some more Epic Games titles coming out over the next couple of years.
Now, this is a rumor, so I don't know how much stock this has, but there's a rumor going around that Epic will delete their Fortnite accounts on July 6th. I mean, that's very specific. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, I have. The rumor originated off of a video. Land made a series of videos against a person named Anti-Snow, who's planning to delete all the accounts for all Fortnite users, kind of reset them to zero, as in, this guy will be able to insert his own script and kind of put his own spin on the Fortnite update files, and so then, delete accounts and players try to run the game on the day patch. He seems very committed to the story, but it doesn't seem to really have a lot of stock, right? Like, we don't even really know if Anti-Snow is a real person. Even so, the technology required, not that it would be impossible, but he has a lot of commitment to the claim, but I don't think there's a ton to back it up. I would err on the side of, I don't think anyone has anything to worry about, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think so either. That would be very strange for a company to just sit there and say, hey, our cash cow, we're going to delete all the accounts and everyone could start over.
Yeah, especially when it's like, yes, you get more things as you play more in the game, but I mean, the game is already it's already so very easy to get into. It's a free-to-play game. You can play it on your freaking phone. You can play it on anything. Like, there's no need to kind of lower the bar in terms of kind of reset things in that way. It doesn't really make sense. And we don't even, this Anti-Snow guy, he's saying he's a guy who's working in Epic, and that's going to be a thing that just happens. And it just doesn't seem to hold enough water for me to really think it to be an actual concern.
All right, well, that's good to know. So everybody out there with Fortnite accounts, you don't have to worry about anything. One of the things that I'm a little curious about, because even though I don't play World of Warcraft, I do like to keep an eye out for things that are happening. And Blizzard announced that they're recently going to do a level rollback and a level cap. Do you think this is going to change how the cycle of game occurs?
This is interesting to me, not because of what it's like. It's more like a why, right? Like, sure, they could announce a level cap, and they've changed the level, they've raised it and brought it back like before. But it's peculiar because, so right now we have World of Warcraft Classic, the very first iteration of the game coming out, being re-released at the end of August. And, the current World of Warcraft is worlds apart from, just comparing League of Legends now to League of Legends Season 1, right? Like, they're practically different games. And I think that, if anything, this could be, if they're rolling back the levels a little bit, it might be a way to, make things less daunting for people who might be coming into, the newer version of World of Warcraft after the potential mass migration for all the old players to go back to WoW Classic, because everyone's clamoring for that nostalgic, authentic, original experience. So I'm not entirely sure why it would be. They've done that before in the past when they've raised the level. It used to be at level 60, and they raised it to 70 and 80 to where it is now, basically, right? And that was to basically give players who play the game long term more things to do. And so maybe it's just about, you know, making the experience a little bit less daunting for new people joining the game. Maybe they're expecting that some of their older players will go back to WoW Classic, and they'll, you know, in conjunction with something else, will make new expansion or something like that, will make, you know, potentially drive new players and a newer player base with potentially less overwhelming limitations to the current version of World of Warcraft once WoW Classic comes out. Because I really think that's going to shake up how World of Warcraft is perceived and how it's enjoyed overall.
Yeah, I think they should have done a level cap way back when, because I remember, I think it was in Mists of Pandaria, where tanks had the same health as a raid boss, and it got a little bit ridiculous. And I thought at that point that, hey, you know, maybe a level cap where you can't go up any higher, that would be perfect then. But they just kept going. And I think now they're going to do, 120 levels, which I think was kind of weird. Why not stop at 100, right? Make it a nice even number.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's another thing, too. Yeah, it could be like related to the, you know, the PvE relationship. Maybe it's some things, you know, they're rolling back the levels that players can achieve to, you know, to potentially make the, you know, the raids and stuff like more challenging in a way. Like, you know, you can only go up so high until things get too inflated. So I think it's, you know, I don't think it's necessarily like a good or a bad thing. I think it just, you know, it depends on what their intentions are and how it's going to benefit the World of Warcraft experience, which we have yet to see what exactly they have planned for that.
So League of Legends, this is what I'm a little curious about, what you're going to think. Mordekaiser, rework. What do you think so far? Good or bad?
So I think we all got a little worried. I think that he's not as oppressive as we all initially thought. I mean, even if we're looking just at competitive play, like, he really hasn't been seen. And I think there's a few things to be said in regards to that. For one thing, the way that Mordekaiser's ult works is that he does kind of take you into a different dimension, right? But you're still able to, you know, control your character. Yeah, he can run you down, but the aspects of what Mordekaiser can do in these one-on-one situations, he still has those same limitations. So maybe you're not able to affect the rest of the map, but if your team can stall out, like, it's just simply not as game-changing as we've potentially seen it. In addition, I think that the rest of his kit, while it, you know, the stats are good, he doesn't have a lot of, you know, direct, you know, mobility spells, right? I mean, League of Legends has become an extremely mobile game over the years. Like, you know, the more mobile, the more dashes and stuff that your champion has, the better. Akali has like 3 of them, Aurelia has 4, you know what I mean? And I think that while Mordekaiser's ultimate is game-changing, and it can potentially be, the situations that allow for it to really be utilized to its maximum may not be as universal as we initially thought. So I think that the rework is fine in that it, you know, it provides some unique traits, and I do think he's in a better spot than he was before. But will it completely, like, will he be breaking the game anytime soon? I don't think so. And does it necessarily solve all of the problems that Mordekaiser had in the past? No, I don't think so either. It's still early to tell. They could be releasing buffs to certain things, or, you know, making changes to certain things. But I like I said, I think the ultimate is cool. And I don't think he's a bad champion by any means, but I do think that he's maybe a little more specified and a little less universally OP than I might have originally speculated.
I'm disappointed about this entire rework. It's lackluster. I was hoping that it would change how Mordekaiser would play, but he's still the same. Even with all the bells and whistles and everything changed about him, he's still the same type of champion. Where
exactly?
If you're stupid enough to get close to him, you're going to die. But I was kind of hoping they would change that a little bit, because that's the only thing he's good at.
Right. He's still very easily kiteable. And
exactly.
All the new abilities are better versions. They're healthy for the game. The champion itself is still kind of, you know, this big lumbering dude coming at you. And it's like, how much can that really do in the current competitive landscape of League of Legends, where everybody can run away pretty much?
Right.
You know, everybody, most people have some kind of dash or blink, or, you know, like, there's, you know, there, you know, there's so many different ways to save people now with Yumi, Tahm, Kench. Like, it's again, there's a lot of potential issues with single target abilities like this in general right now, because of how team focused the game is and how many get out of jail free cards there are for kind of like a single target, you know, ability or single target way to try to kill somebody. And I think we're seeing that in that, in a vacuum, this ultimate sounds very good, but in how you can actually execute it in these fights and actually get in the right position and actually really get the most out of it, it's not as easy as maybe we initially thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, they should have gave him a dash like Aatrox, or that immunity that Olaf has. Something so that he can close that gap. But then again, if they did that, it would just be another Aatrox. It would just be another Olaf. So I don't know what they could have done, but I was really hoping that it would be different, and it isn't.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to see them. You know, I don't think they're just going to completely forget about this. I mean, there's no point in, you know, the people who still played Mordekaiser in the old version liked Mordekaiser, so there's no reason to change him without, you know, giving him some touch-ups. Like, we saw this initially, too, with the when Yorick got initially reworked. It really seemed like, while he had some new things going on, his problems, his weaknesses, were still very easily exploitable. And so I think that they've done, you know, like, they've done a better job on increasing, like, his flows, like, the flow and his beam stuff, like, to, you know, and it to kind of, you know, like, when they reworked Yorick and balanced him out a little better, you know, he has that circle he can trap people in. I think that, I'm not sure they need to, like, you know, fully change all his abilities again or anything like that, but I do think that the game itself doesn't necessarily have a place for that type of champion to thrive in right now, and so I wouldn't expect to see him in every situation, but in certain niche situations, he's going to be great. But again, it's not, I don't think it's going to be as, like, game-bending as we initially thought.
Now, switching gears to a champion that kind of needs to be nerfed again, especially when the lead designer, I'm going to butcher his name, David Capurro, he said he wished to nerf Akali in the future because of her mobility and power. My God, how many more nerfs is she going to get? I mean, do you think it's necessary?
So this highlights a bigger problem with Akali, because I do think we're seeing that, like, at lower levels of solo queue, her win rate isn't as good. Like, to be honest, it's not that she's a bad champion, but that really the thing is that you're still seeing professional players like Cloud9's top laner, Licorice, really, really succeed with her. And it's because of the innate things that her kit brings. You know, we're talking, like, the Shroud, it just has so much versatility, so much utility, whether you're diving, you're running away from somebody, or, you know, no matter what the situation, Akali's innate traits aren't necessarily something that can be nerfed. You can nerf her stats, but it's, again, this type of problem where we have a cool, unique mechanic, but if we nerf a champion too hard into the ground, like, it's not going to matter. But then if we leave her the way she is, like, she's gonna do way too much, right? Like, I think that I'm hesitant to call, you know, her rework, like, a failure, you know, because I think it made her champion more interesting, but I think that it's, like, it's very hard to balance a kit that simply can do so much. She has, you know, she can dash back with her E. She can, you know, her ultimate has multiple dashes. She can do so many different things that, like, she's still worth picking, even if her stats aren't maybe what they used to be two or three patches ago. If you know what you're doing, if you have a good matchup, you can stay safe long enough to scale up and get your items and still do, a lot of damage. Like, you know, she still is pretty, pretty strong when she gets to that late game point. So maybe she's not as, like, oppressive at the one or two item spike anymore, but when she can be that safe and that slippery, which we all know she can, like, how much does that really matter, right? I mean, we saw this a few years back with when Kalista first got released, you know, just the utility of being able to pull in your support and then pull them back out, you know, like setting them back out as your own engage in addition to whatever CC they had, as well as being able to rend objectives, like basically having a secondary smite to secure stuff like Dragon and Baron. She got nerfed 13 times in a row, and she was still very, very playable. They had to completely kill the character for like a year straight by just nerfing her stats before they could figure stuff out, and now we still don't really fear that much for that reason, right? I mean, you know, like, it's the kind of thing where it's like, if Akali is going to be having this kit, like, she's going to be way too good unless her stats, like, make her a niche pick simply because of her not being able to hit hard enough.
Now, here's a champion that I'm a little curious about your take on. It's supposed to be that new jungle, Qiyana. What do you think of her? Have you played her yet?
No, I have not played her yet. I haven't gone to PBE to check her out, but I've taken a look at her, and, like, Initially, I was like, oh, God, just what we need, another Akali-style champion, right? But really, I think that she does fulfill a few things that the game has been missing for a while. We haven't had, like, a pure AD assassin in quite some time, actually. If I recall correctly, we're talking, like, purely assassin, not, like, fighter or bruiser. Like, I think Kane was the last one, which was quite a while ago. And so she's a very, like, high AD, like, high-damage burst assassin. And her, you know, her unique trait is that she, you know, she basically benefits, or she has different strengths depending on what terrain she's in or near. She's near a wall, near a brush, near a river, right? So I think it's going to be like, I think the jungle is the obvious place for her, right? But, you know, I'm hesitant to say, again, this is a similar problem that we're talking about with, like, Akali and even Mordekaiser, is that, like, these unique individual abilities that aren't really, like, seen throughout the game in other ways make champions more difficult to balance. And I commend the development team for being ambitious with these kits, but I'm not really sure, I guess, where she's going to fit in yet. Like I said, I think jungle makes sense, and she is high burst, so I think that she's going to be able to, you know, tear up squishies and all that stuff. But, like, you know, I think that she, if nothing else, will potentially introduce a lot of different ideas about team fighting in the way of, like, oh, where I'm standing in the direct, like, step by step makes sense or matters more, because if I'm more near a rock, you know, or a mountain, she might mess me up, right? So I think that's kind of interesting.
It's funny. When I first saw her, I thought of not only Akali, but Talia, because just the rock stuff in general, and just being able to take the elements. And I thought it was a really, right? It's a really cool concept. And I've been watching a lot of streamers play her, and they've been taking her mid lane. And I see the potential for it. You can go up, you know, the top lane or down to bot lane, and you can just go and assassinate. You don't necessarily need to be a jungle, but I think a lot of people just take her in those lanes just because they want to play her. But I see the potential in mid lane. What about you?
I completely agree, actually. I think that if she's not going to be in the jungle, mid lane makes sense for a few reasons. One, there's, you know, she, like I said, she's going to have fun blowing up squishies, so she's a great mid lane answer into like some of our more immobile mages, like, you know, Lux and those kind of things. In addition to that, you know, mid lane is currently a pretty roam focused role for the most part, like, and because of her terrain benefits, similar to like you said, a Talia or even like a Talon, with these kind of terrain interactive or you know, being stronger depending on the terrain you're around, that makes you a better roamer from those places, right? And also, on top of all that, at like the competitive level, mid and jungle synergy is so important, and being able to follow your jungler in, you know, into these like early game skirmishes, like in the river around Scuttlecrab or you know, invading the enemy's jungle or something like that. Those places are chock full of terrain. So maybe if she's not, you know, maybe if she's not optimal in the jungle, she can still provide so much of that like terrain strength that's innately part of her kit from like a mid lane position that it wouldn't make sense. I don't think top lane makes a ton of sense, because I think that tankier champions, even like bruisers, can survive the initial burst. But in the mid lane, where she has, you know, champions who are threatened by her, she can roam first. And, you know, she will have the priority there, and champions will be afraid to follow her.
Yeah, I think following in mid lane is one of the things that people don't do. You need to go follow when somebody roams. And I think with her, you're not going to want to roam, because the river, that's going to be like her best position to be in, and you're going to be at a complete disadvantage. But I'm curious to see how people are going to handle that. Like, who's going to be able to counter Qiyana?
Yeah, I mean, it's like kind of like swimming after a shark, right?
Yeah.
What I think we'll see is either you're going to see champions that are either fightery enough to kind of outduel her and keep her, you know, in lane, or champions that like are very like, not necessarily tanky, but aren't completely squishy, that can also push in very well. Champions like a Nivea that have a lot of great wave clear and can kind of just keep the lane prioritized might be something, or beating her at her own game. Champions like Talia, Twisted Fate, champions that can get to what she's trying to do and roam faster than her, even if they're second to the punch.
Now, for this upcoming patch, I believe it's 9.13, what can we expect in, you know, nerfs, buffs, and any other changes?
So looking at patch 9.13, so Qiyana is going to be released, which we already talked about, right? Besides that, there's some changes. There aren't a bunch of huge changes here. So Corki got some changes, but really it only really affects his ARAM play. If you're an ARAM enthusiast, Corki will have more special delivery package timers. So that's like, you know, that's really the only other change. They changed how his ammo bar looks. It reads from left to right now. That's more of like a, you know, quality of life change more than anything else. Same thing with, you know, Diana also got quality of life changes to her Crescent Strike. The Q, the tip of it, now reveals Fog of War for a short duration. So if you're like, oh, I want to check this brush, I'm just going to Q into it, that's actually a viable check now. You know what I mean? It also travels a little bit faster too, so I think that's a good thing. Basically, Alawi also got some changes. Her tentacles, you know, don't really go into an idle state anymore, like when she's not around to command them. They are going to despawn now after she's left the area for like 30 seconds basically, and they also increased the AP ratio on the tentacles. So I like this. I think it's really annoying when you're leaning against an Alawi and she backs and like her tentacles are still like there. Like, it's just annoying to me. Like, I think this makes sense. I wouldn't say it's like definitely a hard nerf or a buff, but I think it's just good. She also got on her W, she now has, like, her minimum damage is now, it scales up, so it's not going to be as oppressive in lane. It's going to be more scaling, so it'll be as oppressive. I think this is, like, you know, very much trying to make Alawi less unfun, because right now it's like Alawi either gets ahead early on and is super oppressive to play against, or she doesn't really do much of anything, and then she gets kited into oblivion, right? Like, she's not going to do anything in the game. She doesn't have really any traditional engages or even traditional cloud control of her own, and she doesn't have a lot of ranger dashes, right? So it's like, again, it's kind of the Mordekaiser issue there. You know, so another change to her was for E, the test of spirit, the spirit duration is not only lowered, but also the time between tentacle attacks is higher. So it's, you know, more of, it encourages players to like get out of this quicker, but if you don't, you're going to get punished harder, which I think is good. Lastly, her ultimate leap of faith is now going to be 6 tentacles instead of 5 for the maximum. So that's, I think these are all good quality of life changes to Aulawi. I think this might make her, if nothing else, feel like less, like you have a little bit more control of weighing those. For right now, it feels like if your champion loses to Aulawi, good luck. If your champion beats Aulawi, then GG, you know? And that's not necessarily healthy champion design, right? Obviously, hard counters are a good thing, but when a champion is pretty much a coin flip, I don't think that's necessarily a good thing. We've discussed that about, like, even Teemo in the past, right? So, Karma, thank goodness, got a nerf to her E. her base E after the last patch, because they reduced the cooldown on it, she's basically able to speed up, like, pretty much constantly. Like the cooldown was, like, something between, was, like, less than half a second to where you could just use it again once she had max CDR. So they don't want to, you know, take down the fact that her cooldowns are good. That's a good thing. So they just, they reduced how long the speed boost is, which I think is a smart change. But she's been a little bit oppressive in the fact that she can just kind of perma-speed herself up once she gets to a certain point of mana and cooldown reduction. Ornn got a, this is actually going to change a lot. It sounds small, but Ornn has a lot of ability because of his innate tankiness, his armor, and his sustaining lane where he can kind of build his own items. Really, the only thing that's really holding him back right now is that, like, he gets wrecked in laning phase right now because this is just not a good meta for tanks. So he's not really able to trade effectively in the way that he needs to. So Volcanic Rupture has got a slight ratio from one attack damage to 1.1. And while it seems small, I think this is a push in the right direction. Like, we don't need to, you know, turn Ornn into this monster champion. Again, his kit has a lot of innate values in itself. He just needs, I think, a little bit of a push in the early game, just a little bit of resistance to some of these more oppressive early lanes for himself to be back at a point of viability. Oh boy, yeah, Pyke. Pyke has been just everywhere. If you've been following the competitive landscape, Pyke has been played in the AD carry role, the support role, a few months ago the mid lane role, and the top lane role as well, pretty frequently. And so they definitely want to target that solo lane Pyke. If he gets too far ahead, he's too impossible to really avoid him. You know what I mean? Like, he has, you know, he's very fast, he has, you know, the death trap. If he gets too far ahead, he's going to catch up to you, he's going to kill you. And so what I like they're doing is they're kind of trying to make it harder for him to kind of make the situations happen for himself. They're hitting his wave clear. First of all, he doesn't get the bone skewer stab damage, the bonus damage anymore, but his Ghostwater dive is going to give him more move speed as it scales up. But his the big one is his Phantom Undertow no longer damages non-champions. So minions and monsters are not going to be affected by that Undertow. And so the viability of solo lane Pyke, especially in the top lane where he's been very, very strong, while it still does exist, we know that solo laners without wave clear have a tendency to potentially get pushed in, which makes them more susceptible to ganks, makes it harder for them to roam. And so I think this will help kind of tone down Pyke without removing the core identity of what he's supposed to be doing. Sejuani, really, really simple change. The maximum health for the cast damage is going to be a little bit less, which I think is good. I think her base stats are already good enough without her doing this much damage. She's pretty much the best jungler in the game right now, so this is totally fine. Her health growth is also being reduced from 105 to 95. Diver is also another champion that's been kind of pairing it up, whether it be competitive play, silver, gold, bronze, like challenge for anywhere. She's doing very, very well right now. She has a lot to offer, and the fact that she has, you know, good lane, good wave clear, you know, she you know, her ricochet is extremely strong in the late game when you can kind of hit multiple targets with a single auto attack when you have all your items. So basically what they did is they're making ricochet cost more mana. And I think this is good because as of right now, she can just kind of push the lane with ricochet. Only cost 60 mana. She's going to have the lane priority no matter what, because she's Diver. And so if you're, like, facing against Diver Uni, she doesn't even have to play the game. So she has to just W and just push the lane while you need it, pokes you out with her super annoying Q. The thing I'm probably most excited about is that Sona is getting nerfed. Sona needs nerfs so bad. No matter what you feel about the bot lane Sona, the sort of double support thing with Taric or Tahmkench or whatever, it's a lot. She's the most banned bot lane champion in professional play right now. You know, it's not just her with Taric. Sona Pyke works, Sona Tahmkench works. So basically, they don't want to, you know, take her out of the bot lane entirely because, frankly, she would still need a nerf on multiple fronts anyway. So her Q, the ability power ratio is getting decreased, and her E speed boost is getting cut in half, which is so great because, like, once she hits the 2 or 3 items spike, it feels so bad to play. Another totally questionable, because, like, I think that while these stats on paper make sense, like, Silas getting he got stat buffs, his attack damage is higher, his health growth is higher, the base damage on his W is higher as well, but again, I think this addresses the problem is when you have a champion who can steal ultimates, who can wave clear, who have a dash, who have crowd control of their own, right? Like, it's hard to balance their stats. They have so much that the kit already has to offer. But I guess what they wanted to kind of nudge him up and see if that if that helps. I personally don't think this is needed whatsoever. I think he's in a perfectly fine spot, but clearly they feel differently. Syndra got mana growth increased, which I think is fine. I think that Syndra's good, not great, and it'll help her, you know, to be more viable across, like, the lower elos. People might not be as good at mana management, like in Bronze, Silver, and Gold. Tristana has got attack damage growth. She got mana and mana regen growth as well. And her rocket jump does more damage now. I don't think that there's a... I mean, it's still magic damage. I don't think that that's like really like going to be a huge change in any regard. But, you know, little tiny nice buffs to Tristana are never a bad thing. I think she's kind of on the fringe of being potentially competitive right now. So that's good. Woodier has a lot of changes, actually. All abilities can be leveled to rank 6. Basically, what they want to do is kind of balance them so he's not, like, picking one style over the other. I think the original idea of Woodier was to be able to switch between his different stances to be strong, but really what we see for the most part is Woodier is succeeding. He's just, like, going with full Tiger or something like that, or, like, you know, just going full, or Phoenix, just going full into one stance and kind of building all the way towards that, which kind of, that's not what they want to do with the champion, right? So, all four of his abilities have seen damage buffs, and also he's, and damage buff, his bear stance got more on the movement speed, both in how much bonus speed he gets, and also the duration. His turtle stance got a W, his turtle stance now has more defense, and then they changed the ratios to his tiger stance damage. So it really is like, I think what they're trying to do here is that really kind of make it so that Udyr can be a viable champion while using all of his, you know, all of the stances instead of just kind of going all in on one style for him. We don't really have any changes to rune, but we do have some items. Essence Reaver's cost is total cost is increased, but the upgrade cost is decreased. And the build path is being slightly adjusted, which is a great thing. I think that right now it feels a little clunky to build, and it's not about how expensive it is, but really just where that gold happens. And so I think this will make building those components to Essence Reaver feel a little bit more smooth than it currently has, which right now is kind of like, the components are fine, but it's like you're not really getting the full value out of the item until, you know, until you get, like, the full item itself, whereas, like, building something like, you know, Infinity Edge, for example, you can get a lot of BF Sword and Pickaxe on your way to the full item. Rendu and Zoman, which we haven't seen a ton in competitive play or really anywhere. It's not, like, a super popular tank item right now. They lowered the gold, basically, which I think is good. I think it might actually make it a more viable pick. It's not that it's a bad item, it's just that for the same price, there are too many other items that offer more, either in the way of stats or in the way of utility. This meta is very fast, and so they changed Rod of Ages. Right now, the early game is super important, and Rod of Ages is still a very, for certain champions, it is the only good first item, you know? Like, I think for AP, just with Crimson Fate, you can say that. I think for Nibia, you can say that as well. And so what they're going to do, they lowered the cost of Rod of Ages, because right now it's taking simply too long for Rod of Ages builders to get to a point of where the item gets fully stacked and where it becomes worth the purchase for it. And so I think just like a little slight change, it's only being decreased by 100 gold. But I think even that, is being able to finish it potentially like a minute or two sooner, could make all the difference for the Rod of Ages spellcasters.
Well, Nick, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. You can follow me on Twitter, just my name, Nick Geraci, or feel free to look at InventGlobal.com. I'm one of the staff writers on that site. I have an author profile, and, you know, we're producing a lot of really cool content right now. We've started doing a lot of video interviews, especially in League of Legends, and we have a bunch of fun new projects on the horizon. So I hope to see you all there.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapane.com. That's masonverapaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.